Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Rouge has become a formidable presence in the music industry. This multi-talented artist continues to redefine what it means to be a rapper, singer, and songwriter in South Africa and beyond. Rouge's breakthrough moment came in 2017 with the release of her debut album, The New Era Sessions, which was not just a musical project, but a multimedia experience. The accompanying film, conceptualized and written by her husband, Macmillan Z.S. Mabaleka, and starring Rouge in the lead role, won a South African Film and Television Award for Best Micro-Budget Film. That same year, she won the South African Hip-Hop Award for Best Female Artist. Her music video for Aram Tam Tam earned her a South African Music Award for Best Music Video, cementing her status as one of the country's top performers. Rouge has also become a familiar face in television and brand campaigns. She has hosted popular shows such as The Coalition on Vuzu TV and Remix SA on SABC 1. She has collaborated with major brands including Levi's Jeans, Jagermeister, Dark and Lovely, Celsius, and Red Bull. Most recently, she was commissioned to create the official anthem for the Pretoria Capitals cricket team's 2025 T20 season. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Soligol Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, is Rouge.
Joining me, we have got Rouge.
Hi.
Lovely to meet you in person. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I look forward to this conversation. So let's dive straight in.
Alrighty.
How and where and what did you choose the stage name Rouge? How does it come?
Oh, gosh. So when I figured out, okay, I'm going to be a rapper, my ID name did not work for it.
Okay.
I have to say it because they're going to check. They're going to go look for it after this. So my name is Barbara.
Oh.
Barbara Jessica.
Okay.
See, it doesn't sound like a rapper. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. So I had to change it. And I was trying to find something that kind of really speaks to my character. And I felt the color red says a lot about that. The color red, you know, it means it's love, it's passionate, there's anger, it grabs your attention quickly, it speaks to rage, it speaks to passion. And it's a whole bunch of things that I felt that I could encompass within myself and within the character that I'm trying to create with, you know, with this rap world. And I was like, but red sounds a bit boring. I am French speaking. I'm first generation South African.
Oh,
so yeah, my heritage is Congolese. So I said, let me call myself Rouge. I feel like it makes sense. They definitely don't pronounce it this side as Rouge.
Yes.
But that's what it is. So that's where it came from. And I thought it was also a nice opportunity for like now when somebody asks me how did it come up, I can mention my Congolese side, yes, which I'm very, very proud of. So yeah.
You know, everyone has a different dictionary definition of things. And
yes,
you mentioned the color red.
Yes.
To add, the way I see red is energy and vibrance.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
It's interesting because a lot of people perceive red as danger or they need to stop or it's related to blood. Mm-hmm. So there's fear linked
yes,
to it.
Yes, yes.
But that's, again, everyone's got their own dictionary.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's about understanding that.
100%. But I fell in love with it immediately.
So you referenced that you decided to go into the rapper world. So at what age, whether as a child or teenager, did that spark inspire, and how did that journey lead to where we are?
No, look, so definitely was not the plan in any shape or form. Well, funny. So it was actually through a friend who said, oh my gosh, you have like a rapper voice. I said, hell no. What does that even mean?
Look, while you were talking, they picked that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was, no, so it was a mix. So it was talking and then I was, because look, I'm a theater baby. I wanted to do musical theater with all my heart. I wanted to be in The Lion King, man. I wanted to do Oliver Twist. Those are the things that I put my mind to during school as well, doing house plays and all of that. And because of musical theater, obviously I sang. So with him, I wanted to go to studio and just kind of practice the music side of things, the singing side of things. And that's when you told me, oh, you have a voice for rap. Then I said, I don't. That's not a thing. And yeah, then he was just like, no, give it a shot. And I did. And I fell in love with it immediately. And it was late. I think I only, my love for the genre only came in, I was like 19, 20. And mm-hmm. that's super, super late. For anybody who's like in the industry, usually for everyone else, it's like friggin', they're like 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah. Like when you look at all your favorite artists, that's when they've probably started with this thing. No, I found it outside of high school into varsity when I should have already figured out everything I wanted to do. That's when it hit me.
But I mean, you already had the entertainment foundation there.
I did.
So
I did.
It wasn't like going from doctor to. And it was still sort of in the same genre, just a little veering off.
And it's so funny you say that because. So the family I come from, like I said, I'm a first generation South African of Congolese. So if anybody knows things about like Congolese people, there's no such thing as arts. You're not going to come to your parents and tell them I want to be a singer. It's I want to be a doctor. I want to be a scientist. I want to be a lawyer. You
accountant.
Know, accountant. Those, it's there. That's the world. So just to give you context, my older sister is a lawyer. And she works for one of the biggest, if not one of the biggest oil companies in the world. My other sister's a doctor. My other sister's a doctor. My brother also works in mining. My dad's a doctor. My mom owns a few hospitals. And then I came and said, I want to rap. You can imagine how that conversation, that conversation went. Wasn't the greatest. So I had to make it. So yeah.
How long did it take for them to come to terms with it?
Oh, forever. It took a while because already they were like, oh, the arts, you know, musical theater. Like, don't you want to like, you know, go study, I don't know, BSc or something. But then they were slowly warming up to the arts thing. But then when I came with the rapping thing, they said, now you're pushing it. Now you're asking a lot. It was after, I think when they saw, because I'd been saying that I want to do this since I was a kid, man. And for them to realize that I wasn't joking. When I got to first year university, when I finished matric, and then I'm like, okay, I want to go study this. They fought it for a while, but then I think they saw my determination because I was now up every day. Once I figured out the rapping thing, they would see me up till 3, 4 in the morning practicing and writing and rehearsing by myself in front of the mirror. And my mom's like, okay, there must be something here. So it ended up being her taking me to the auditions, taking me to drop off my song at the radio stations and et cetera, until today. It's my mom who called me yesterday to make sure, like, how's the album going? Are you done? Like, we need the stuff finished, you know? So it's insane. Like, they're my biggest supporters.
Still being that intention of that drive of doctors, lawyers, and accountants.
Yes.
Now, supporting you with that full intention. Mm-hmm. I love that. That idea of then at 19, 20, saying, I want to do it and be it and performing it.
Yeah.
What were the next steps to then it becoming professional?
Oh, my word. I won't lie to you. I didn't have steps, eh? It really was kind of like, whatever happens, happens. So, okay, cool. I knew, okay, I wanted to do this. But I also knew that I didn't know enough about it. So there was a long period, say for like almost a year, of just practicing. That meant me practicing my writing, practicing, listening to different artists that I liked to try and figure out what's my sound that I want to, you know, be able to go for. During that process, then it obviously came with going to studio. Boy, I didn't realize studio was expensive. I was just like, what in the world? This is so pricey. But luckily I found a family who, there was a team who they really believed in my talent. So they allowed me to just come in there when people are not rehearsing. I'd come in there and I would just write and listen. And the producer would make beats for me and he would show me how to, you know, okay, this is how you write this. This is where you would start a song. This, you know what I mean? So there was schooling basically that was happening for a while. And I think maybe, then it was probably the next year where I was like, okay, I think I finally get it now. Because by that point, because I took my gap year to figure out the rap thing off the matric. And then I decided to go to varsity. Because that was also kind of the deal that I had with my parents, mm-hmm. which I was like, it's not even a deal. I want to go to varsity anyway. Okay. So I went to university and I studied. And during that period was, I guess, slowly starting to build relationships. Because at that point, I started testing the waters of going to events and asking, okay, if I can quit perform here, entering competitions, slowly building relationships with key people that could change my life, essentially. And it happened. And it was amazing because I think things kind of like finally aligned for me by the time that I entered first year. So there wasn't even like a thing of like me being like, okay, am I going to use this degree? I knew, okay, cool, I'm going to use my degrees. Because I went and I studied film.
Okay.
So I went to the University of Pretoria, went and I studied film. Because my parents were like, okay, you could still use this film degree. So I went to Tux, studied. But even during that process, things were already aligning. Because I got, you know, I got record deal opportunities from the biggest labels that were already offering. So I kind of knew, once I'm done here with my, you know, my 3-4 years, I know where I'm going. I'm pretty much set. All the labels were already aware that I was studying. So all of them were kind of like, okay, cool. When you're ready to go, we're moving. So yeah, I guess things kind of panned out how I needed it to pan out on time.
You reference that things went slowly.
Yes.
At that time that they were going slowly, was it ever a situation of like, oh, I wish this was happening quicker? Or you were distracted with the studying and the schooling and all the other things that were happening?
I think it's everything you just said. It was a mix of all. Like, distractions from the school stuff, because it kept me so busy. But as well as wanting things to move, because there was plateaus. There was many moments where I was just like, okay, this might not work out. Because as I said, there were the labels. And I thought, amazing. Not amazing. Because then by the time I'm signing here, they drop me. And then now I'm like, what am I going to do? I have to figure this out. Then I find management. And so there was a lot of ups and down journeys that was going. And weirdly enough, it was ups and downs before I had my big break. So I guess it was that process of trying to find the right teams and the right people that I wanted to work with whilst I was studying as well. So yeah, there was a lot of demotivating times, but at the same time, it was also kind of like, how am I going to do this with the school stuff as well? Yeah, it was a mix. It was a mix of all of that.
And you mentioned that labels dropped you and it was ups and downs, yeah, et cetera, and finding the teams. Do you potentially feel that if those situations didn't happen, you wouldn't have had the experience, knowledge, and foundation that you do now compared to if you was like signed then and there?
100%. 100%. Like, the song that changed my life, which was Mbongo Zaga, the one that blew me up, happened because of the team that dropped me. It was out of pure desperation and learnings that I ended up, you know, literally the same day when I got the call. It was the same day. And it wasn't even dropping, really. It was, they were just, I guess the word is liquidating.
Ah, yes, you know? Yes.
And yeah, so when, you know, finding that, I was devastated because I was like, what am I going to do? And through that desperation, I wrote the songs. Those are the songs that catapulted me. It's kind of like the songs ended up doing the PR by themselves, which was amazing. So it kind of speaks volumes in terms of like what the universe can do. Yeah, it was a weird time because it was like, what's going to happen now? Okay, just focus on the talent, which was actually my dad, because I got the call and I was crying in my room. And then my dad was like, okay, I get you sad. Right, just write about it. So I wrote about it, went to record it. And yeah, the moment I dropped it, I didn't have to walk into a single radio station or anything like I did before. It was done.
At this moment in time, how do you create a song?
I still have the same process of how I create music. Okay. People are going to find it weird. Don't find it weird, guys. Please don't find it weird. Because like I said, studio was expensive, right? So I knew I wouldn't have the luxury of being able to go to studio for hours on end until I figured things out. So I beat on my chest. So I would be at home and I'll just... And then I write. Welcome everybody. Peace of freedom. Make it down. So you keep... Oh, okay. That's literally how I come up with till now. So it's almost a tick. I'd say it's a tick now. I can't write music without beating on my chest first. So even when I'm in studio and the producers are like, oh, we have this amazing beat, and they play the beat and they're like, okay, do you want us to loop the beat for you to write? I say, no, you can cut it now. Beat on my chest and then I write. Same process.
I find that interesting because we are energy. Everything's energy.
Yeah.
And music is sound waves and energy.
Yes.
So the fact that you beating here to bring it and concretize it within your body.
Yep.
You know where I'm trying to get.
100% it's
like,
I do.
Because I've spoken to many artists, that a lot of them say that they feel like they're a channel.
Yes.
For the stuff to come through.
Oh, 100%.
And by you doing this, I feel it.
100%.
Concretizes it, pulls it down.
Yeah.
And then pulls it into your body, which 100%. Then lands it onto the paper.
No, you've literally hit the nail on the head. It really just creates these vibrations that I feel that I'm connected with. And I cannot make music any other way. It's my process. I think it's going to be my process until the day I die. It just makes sense. My mom used to laugh at me because, guys, I used to go so red. Every time I come up, she's just like, oh, this girl is beating on her chest again. But I was like, but that tells you I had a great session.
Yes.
But yeah, that's been the process till now.
And do you beat over your heart or not necessarily?
So
just in the middle.
Yeah, just okay. In the middle. So I can feel the resonance and yes, I can feel the vibrations and it lets me. Yeah, I guess it helps me create my pattern and it helps me create that flow that, you know, that I need to find within my mind of, okay, where do I want to go with this? So that even if it doesn't matter the beat or the genre, if I can find that sound within my own beat that I create for myself, everything will work.
What's coming up over the next period of time? I know it's so secretive much. In your guys' world.
Very.
So what can you tell us?
Oh, gosh. Okay, what I can say is I'm so excited to finally release my sophomore album. So wrapping it up as we speak.
Sorry, no pun intended with the wrapping it up.
Yeah, that was, oh my gosh, rapper. but yeah, so that album's going to be coming out. It's called Milk and Honey, which I'm so excited about. Yeah, just telling the story of a journey. As we know, you know, with Milk and Honey, even biblically, we understood the currency that came with it and the journey of me trying to get to the promised land. And for me, the promised land is this album because it's taken me years. I think, yeah, we're hitting on from my debut album. It's been about, I'd say a good seven years since I dropped. So yeah, this one matters. This project really matters.
Why the gap? Just life things happening?
It was both. Yeah, it was life things. It was COVID was terrifying, especially for the entertainment industry. So, you know, and especially during that time, it was just this wake up call of from gigging like this to COVID. And it's like, you guys are not allowed to gig. And it's like, oh, we actually need to find other ways to make money.
Mm.
We cannot just rely on gigs and hoping that the streams do what they need to do. And yeah, so then I ended up creating an incredible organization with my boy, the Ginger Mac, my dear husband there. And yeah, so Tribe Nation Global, the goal was just to find creatives and put them in opportunities where they can use their talent for good. And then I just got so busy with, and I loved helping and I loved helping communities and stuff like that. And then also a lot of people dying as well. Seeing my favorites like AKA, who was my mentor, AKA passing away, seeing Costa Titch passing away, Ricky Rick, all these people who are essentially my friends passing away also created this hectic writer's block and I guess fear that it was only happening within our genre. And yeah, so the gap was because of that and then the imposter syndrome of, why would I come back? No one wants to hear from me. And yeah, I know.
Oh my word. Throw that up.
I know.
Oh my God.
But it kept me quiet for a while. Yeah.
It's amazing how every human in some way or some form self-sabotages themselves.
Right? It's insane. And I think, funny enough that you say that, because a lot of the artists that I was speaking to recently, Nadia Nakai being one of them, and I didn't even tell her. She was telling me about how, because I just opened a beauty bar in Sandton. And she's like, oh my gosh, I wish I could do this, but like, I don't think anyone will come. I'm like, you're Nadia Nakai. Do you see the millions of followers? And she was telling me, no, I just have this imposter syndrome that I just don't think anyone likes my stuff or will come for my anything that I open. So it was like, we're all the same.
Yeah.
We're all the same.
Whenever we hear it, it's just a mirror for ourselves. Yeah. It was like, I heard it from you now. And it was like, okay, there were things there that I needed to hear today. I love that you're releasing an album because 7 years is quite a long time, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
And now it's become about the single, the EP.
Yes.
And I love that people are releasing bodies of work. So
100%.
Are you still an album person?
Yeah.
What was the inspiration?
Look, and I love that you asked that question. It's just been so sad. Just like, not sad. No, it is sad. It's sad. Guys, it's sad. How I feel like the way just the generations have changed where it's, I'm going to Spotify and I'm going to Apple to just get that one song of somebody's project, you know, and I'm going to the one that was starred by everyone else. So you're not even taking the time to necessarily be an individual and go listen for yourself and find the song that really speaks to you, as opposed to trying to find the song that everybody's like, this is the most amazing song in the world. You'll be so shocked that if you actually go by yourself and go listen to the album, you'll find the song that is a true reflection of yourself. So that's how I was like, no, I'm definitely going to be releasing an album. And even with me, like with my first project as well, I also don't believe in just releasing albums. I believe in brilliant rollouts. I believe in albums being really well crafted, like where it needs to tell a story from beginning to end. And this project's no different. So I'm excited in terms of being, for people being able to listen to it, like the narrators I'm getting on this, the actors I'm getting on this album. I'm actually going to be putting together a film, you know, and I actually put a film for my first one as well, which won me a SAFTA. No different. I really believe in the process of also giving the fans something for them to be like, okay, I actually have to go listen from beginning to end to get the full story.
I love me a CD. And for the overseas listeners in South Africa, there's not many avenues for us yet. Physical at the moment. I'm not sure if you're aware, overseas, massive uptick of physical. In the UK a couple of years ago, 5.9 million vinyl sold, the biggest since 1990.
Wow.
Last year in the UK, again, they have a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on.
Mm-hmm.
There need to be a high number of exchanges each day for a specific product to be in this basket, and they gauge it for some form of tax purposes.
Okay.
Because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in that basket.
That's amazing.
And the research is showing it's the teenagers, the younger kids who are diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. Then we've got these streaming platforms, and you mentioned the number of streams earlier. You've already touched on it a little bit with the album and the body of work. Understanding these elements now, what are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I'm so glad you said that. It's such that's interesting stats, man. Look, I think we know how amazing it was to go and buy a CD. We know, at least for me as an artist, that excitement of when I would go for signings was so cool, you know, and having people come in and want me to see that, you know, they're literally supporting. I guess it's also about the times. We do understand that the times are changing and there is an evolution that does need to take place. But even with me, I am going to be releasing vinyls for this project. It's already in the works because I do also know people do appreciate having a physical body of work. Like to really feel like, you know what, I was really a part of this journey. And something to actually show later. Guys, here's my thing. The digital things happen. Like things can disappear on the internet. You know what I mean? Like things. I know there's so many songs that, you know, back in the day when, you know, guys, when we used to like pirate music. Don't do that now.
Never
done that now. But like back then where there were songs where because there wasn't platforms like Apple and all that stuff. And I think it was called like Media Fires and stuff like that where people would, you know, put songs. And now you can't find those songs anyway. And for me, it just kind of scares me a bit in terms of like, geez, this is also such a risk if you just like, I'll put it on Spotify and I'll put it on Apple and that's that. The beauty of this physical asset, it's real, it's there, it's forever.
It's always yours.
It's forever.
But I've got a point around this because I've got my CDs and I've got my physical, but I teach spinning classes. So I create playlists for my spinning classes. And I did it when COVID was happening because it wasn't working, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, let me get them done now. And then I did a whole batch and I went back into playlists more a couple of years ago than I noticed recently. A lot, and I'm not talking one or two songs. I'm talking like over 50 to 60 songs all of a sudden off Spotify.
See what I mean?
It's like, where is this? This is on the playlist. Why is it not here anymore?
Oh, man.
I was like, damn, this is a good song, a good remix. And now it's not there. I'm like, I've got the CD. I'll play it over there.
Exactly. And I know there's many songs for me as well like that from my favorite artists where it's like, gosh, if I don't have the actual physical, I'll never find it. There's many songs like that where it kind of feels like they're gone forever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the beauty of physicals, man. I'm still very much for it. I get the growth. I understand the trajectory that it's going into, but I see why, especially the UK, is going back into the space of physicals. I get it. I'm shocked that it's kids.
It's not over the UK. It's all over in Australia as well.
But being youth is blowing my mind.
Because they've got the stores to get there. Yeah. They've got these HMVs and Tower Records. They've got these sort of franchises of stores that they can still go in and massive and go through all this stuff. In South Africa, we don't have that anymore because we don't have the accessibility because there's no stores to do so. What do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, everything. I love the nerves. I love the what could effing go wrong. Like I said, I come from a theater background. So it was all about live performing. It's all about getting on stage and everyone saying chukus, chukus, everyone, and getting on that stage and hoping nothing goes wrong and literally break a leg. It's no different with, you know, with me performing and rapping. It's still that moment of anything could happen here. I've had many times where, oh my gosh, I forgot all the words. Every single lyric. I remember, I should have been like, I'm never rapping again after this. There was an event I did. I was chosen to go and rap and perform in this big, big, big competition. And I went and I was so confident. I actually wasn't nervous at all. And they were like, oh, it's your time. Cool. Know my song, know my lyrics. Get on stage. Zubba, zubba. I literally started saying zubba, zubba, zubba. It was so disheartening. And I think for like a good, it wasn't that long, but it was long. In my mind, I'd say, okay, it probably felt like forever in my mind. Yes. But like, it was probably felt like a good 10 seconds, which is a lot. It's a lot. I was just, I could not remember a single word. And the whole crowd is staring at me. It was terrifying, man. But I love it. I love it, man.
I've wanted to ask, I haven't asked artists this before.
Yeah.
And you bring it up. So thank you. Do you allow the audience to know that's happening? Or do you just sort of... Okay.
No. During that time, because I was just not a professional back then. So okay. The audience definitely knew. But no, in moments like that, you definitely try and hide it. Or if it's something obvious, for me, like, I laugh about it with the audience. Like, there's been many times where my music has just, like, scratched out. Or I've said, play this song, and then my DJ plays another one. And it's like, then we make a joke, and then I interact with the crowd about it. But it's about not panicking, you know what I mean? And letting the crowd know, no, we've got this. Like, don't worry. Everything is, you know, is under control. But that's the game. And I absolutely love it. I love every second of my nerve. If I'm not nervous before I'm performing, it means it doesn't matter. It means I don't care. I need to feel the nerves.
Those and then when
I
feel,
I need them, man.
That fear, that excitement.
Oh, it feels like I'm about to go on a roller coaster. Like,
yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's that. I need to feel that.
I know that butterfly. Yeah.
No, it's amazing, man. Like, and if I feel that, I know, okay, we're going to rock. We're going to do, it's a show. It's a show today.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. Live.
Yes.
And live is energy. It's flowing. It's interaction.
Yes.
And it's not supposed to be perfect.
No, not at all. And I think that's the beauty. That's where the magic comes. Like, when it's just not... It isn't perfect when nothing can be predicted. Like, my best shows have been in moments where this was not the plan in any shape or form. I remember when I went to Bushfire and I was like, oh my gosh, they made me open up. I was so mad. They made me open up for Hot Sticks Mabuza. And I was like, why would they do this? He's huge. He's like South Africa's gym, like the Hugh Massey killers of the world.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're not going to like me. This, oh my gosh. Because you know Bushfire, it's a mix of people from all over the world coming to just listen to music. And had a plan. And I'm just like, you know, screw this plan. We're just going to have fun, guys.
Yeah.
Let's just have fun.
Yeah.
And what a show it was. There was a moment where I decided to add a song to my set last minute that I've never performed before. And that was the song everyone in Swaziland was singing word for word. And the lights had literally, it's almost like the team knew, man. Like, they turned off all the lights and everyone's phones went up. And that was my first moment of having like thousands of people just literally holding their phones and singing my song loud with lights. I was like, this is, you can't pay for this.
Yeah.
You actually can't pay for moments like this. This is what I've signed up for.
I love this game. Mm. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 years, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that and I recognize that.
Okay.
I'm not saying favorite.
Okay. You're scaring me.
I'm saying top of mind. If on the way home now, you had to push play to five other artists, who would those artists be? And if you can think of a specific song of theirs, what song would you play of it?
Okay. This is easy and hard. First one is definitely John Mayer. It's going to be Stop This Train by John Mayer. It's my favorite song in the entire world. Then it would be Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill, it would be, which one? Because she's my favorite artist of all time. Let's put What would it be? Corinthians 13. Then it would be AKA. AKA it would be Composure. Then I would play... This is hard.
And this is when it normally starts getting hard.
Yeah, this is where it gets tough. Then I'd probably play some... there's a guy named Jazzworks right now. They're doing amazing. I play a song by Jazzworks. I think it's called Usizwa. It's for the first time that, like, outside of hip-hop, I've fallen in love with another genre of music called three-step that South Africa created. Mm. I would play that song. And then last but not least, I'd probably play Stevie Wonder. Probably play from Stevie Wonder. Which one? Because there's 1,000. My Cherie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why was the intentional idea to create a movie around the release of the previous album? Did you think you would win an award from that specifically?
Hell no.
Okay. And then what's inspiration behind the movie for this one? Or is it a similar inspiration?
Look, for that first one, it was just like, guys, let's make a movie. There was no like... There's no deep story. It was really one of those...
Sort of like what, behind the scenes or...
No. Oh. We literally... So the Ginger Mac, actually, we were talking about, let's make a movie. And he's like, okay, cool. We wrote a script.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we got Atandwa Kani, shout out, to play our lead in this film. We got some really, really great actors to tell a story. So basically, we used my debut album as just kind of like the through line to just kind of drive the movie. But it wasn't really about the album at all.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Yeah. So did we expect to? No. I even remember when we went to the Saftas, I was just like, okay, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
That should be enough. Because I was just watching actors and production houses be coming on stage and winning and being like, oh my gosh, we've been trying to win this for like 20 years. I'm just like, okay, we're so not winning this. Like, this is not what, like, we stand no chance. And then when they announced that we won the SAFTA, I remember I went blank for a second. And then my sister was like, go get on stage. I got on stage. I looked dumb, man. I really hope that it's not a line, but like, I just stood there like this.
Yes.
Like, literally, that was my face. So the director decided to go talk on the mic.
Yes.
Because I was dumbfounded.
Yes.
There were no words. And then I stood there and I just remember the crowd laughing because they could see that, like, I'm not acting. This is not, oh my God, I can't believe. I genuinely yes. felt like I don't know what I'm doing on the stage
yes.
right now. This is weird. And it was just another, eye opener of, you see my degrees being used, you know?
Oh, yes, that's right.
You know, it was
yes.
exactly. Like, it's literally everything was now coming full circle.
Mm.
So being able to take that award, our first try, when people have been doing this for years on end, it was just another reminder that we're in the right space. We're doing this right. So, and now with this one, again, it's not the expectation of we want to win an award. Mm. We've done it. We just want to now tell an incredible story with intention. Because like we said before, it was, let's just put a cool movie together.
Yeah.
But now we really want to really be able to put intention within the writing, within the storyline, within the editing, within the coloring, within the, you know, the production, the cinema, you know, the cinematography. All of that is going to be quite detailed because we really want to, you know, honor the story that we're trying to tell this time.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world.
Yeah.
As a final message to the listening audience, mm-hmm. what would you like to say?
Firstly, I'm back. So excited to do music again. Like I said, album's coming out. But I think my main message to them would be, do it afraid, guys. My sentence is, do it afraid. That's at least the journey that I'm on. Because right now I'm just like, what am I doing? Let me stop. Let me just go back. And it's like, nope. Carry on walking straight. Carry on going. Do it afraid, because doing it afraid means there's an incredible opportunity to be courageous. And being courageous is such a gift, man. It's a superpower.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.